Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Those of us born before 1985, what Michael Harris calls the straddle generation, are living in a Gutenberg moment, a moment in time when innovation changes lives sporadically. We alone remember life without the internet and have borne witness to the rapid shift from face-to-face interactions to online experiences. But soon nobody will remember life before the internet. What does this unavoidable fact mean? Before the memory of those absences is shuttered, perhaps now is the time when we can record what came before our lives of constant connections. Now, there is the book, In the End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Michael Harris to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me here.
An award-winning journalist and a contributing editor at Western Living and Vancouver magazines. What brought you to this subject?
Well, it was actually working as a full-time editor at a magazine. Like a lot of people working in magazines and at offices, I was one of these guys with two computer screens in front of me all day long, and I was spending most of my life kind of staring at glowing rectangles. And I basically had one of these moments where I realized my life was a digital overload, and it wasn't my real life. It's not what I wanted. I wanted some experience of solitude, some experience of detachment from the matrix. So I ended up quitting my job and devoting myself to this one project that I could pay attention to. And that ended up being the book, The End of Absence.
I'm interested in the term absence. That is what is ending, in your opinion.
Mm-hmm. I began looking at what is this change? What is it that I know about that everyone who comes after today will have maybe less of an appreciation for or less understanding of? And I think those of us born after 1985, they haven't really had the chance to be adults with pre-internet brains. And it's that quality of, by absence I mean, solitude, daydreaming, reverie, those abilities to disconnect, which those of us born before the internet are going to be maybe some of the last people to remember the value of.
One of the things that's fascinating about the book is that you make the point that pretty much every aspect of our life in some way, shape, or form has been affected by this connectedness.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the thing. When you have a Gutenberg moment, as it's termed in the book, this is a communication technology that changes every part of our lives. It's not just changing the way that we send messages to each other. So one of the chapters is devoted to public opinion. One chapter is devoted to sex. One chapter is devoted to the idea of authenticity, and so on and so on. It really touches every part of our lives.
I was interviewing the writer and social commentator Fran Lebowitz the other day, and she was saying that we are a generation now that is still staring at this technology in wonder. And there will come a time, as you point out in the book, where it is just accepted and we are no longer in awe. It's hard to know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, I think she's absolutely right that we have stumbled into a superabundance of connection, and we don't know what we're doing. We really are staring at it still. And the next step, I think, is to develop a healthy media diet and an approach toward our screens that is balanced and gives us that balance between connection and disconnection. It's the same as when we got a superabundance of sugars and fats and oils in our diet. There were several decades there where we were eating pretty horrible food without really having any kind of intelligence about when might we have too much sugar or too much fat.
And when you think about that, of that constant connectedness, at what point do you think we realize what effect it is having on us? Or do we?
Some of us might never realize that or care about it. It's possible to float in the matrix very happily, right? That's that's kind of the idea, that these technologies develop in order to prey upon our most addictive instincts, our desires for connection, our desires to feel heard and acknowledged. These are very deep primal desires that we have. You might have to be binging on social connection the way that I was working at that magazine before you have that overload point and you start to pull back. For me, the result of that breaking point was I took an entire month off from the internet. This was actually a year ago. I called it my analog August, and I took 30 days, no internet and no cell phone, to try and reboot myself.
And?
Well, there's no cure for the internet, it turns out. The only thing that you can hope for is to become more smart about the way that you do connect. And I think that's an important point, that, you know, it's never going to be about abstinence. We're not going to turn off the internet at some point or turn off our cell phones. This is the world that we live in, and we need to learn how to become savvy and intelligent media users.
When you think about the effect that this has on us, it what you write about seems to have more of an effect on older adults than it does kids and young adults, because they are more used to it.
Well, I'd argue it has as much of an effect on everyone. It's just that those who have pre-internet memories are the ones that are more awake to the effect that it's having on them. I mean, the American Academy of Pediatrics has delivered reports stating that babies who have any screen time at all are much more likely to develop attention deficit disorder, and children over 2 who have more than 1 or 2 hours a day have higher attention deficit disorders. So we know it has real concrete effects on our brains, and we know that we're all failing at that. I mean, those guidelines, 2 hours a day for children, nobody meets that. The average American teenager, I believe it's 6 to 8 hours of screen time a day. So they're threefold where they should be.
When you think about the constants that are now in our lives of this connectedness, the technology is only growing. The quote unquote promises are only growing. One can only assume that the impact is only growing.
I think it's true. And the only way out of that tide is to try and remind ourselves what the value of absence and solitude is. It's a very hard thing to remember when you're in the middle of it, of those connections, I mean. But when you jerk yourself out of it, when you give yourself a digital detox, you start to remember that that fear of solitude that we all have, that fear of being just alone with ourselves, if you push through that, you get to this incredible point where you can start developing a rich interior life. And it's a life that isn't beholden to whether or not your friends like or retweet something. And that ability to have a self-esteem that is independent of other people is, I think, one of the biggest treasures that we get when we do disconnect.
You read in the book, "I don't care whether a computer knows that I've seen all of Modern Family twice, but I do care very much whether my love life is crowdsourced. Yet how could it not be, the more I become enveloped by online processes? And if we end up browsing for sexual partners the same way we hunt for a decent sushi joint, will our true sexual potential have been revealed by the magic wand of Grindr and the rest? Or will it have been masked by the static of the medium itself? Will the omnipresence of choice, in other words, block us from the absences that so often fuel our desires?" You're speaking of sex there, but that can fill into a lot of things, can't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there's sort of two roads that we can go down at the same time, hopefully. One is using the internet to broaden our world, which it does so magnificently, which could mean finding partners online or finding sushi joints, but also always maintaining that quality of solitude and remembering the value of absence. If there's a way to do both at the same time, to balancing the two, I think that's where we find real happiness. I mean, when you reminded me of that part of the book, I was thinking about the first time I went to Paris. I went to the Eiffel Tower, and like a lot of people, I climbed to the top, and instead of having that authentic moment of staring out over Paris, my first instinct was to text a photo to my boyfriend, because I've become so conditioned to think something doesn't matter unless I can connect with other people. And I think that we lose something in that bargain. We lose that ability to develop our own sense of self.
You do say in the chapter at the beginning that this new frontier may be inhabited by everyone, gay and straight, men and women, but gay guys are the vanguard. How so?
Yeah. How so?
Yes.
Well, you know, from the beginning, gay culture required that, I'm speaking of gay male culture. I can't really speak to lesbians, but gay male culture required this sort of underground, very particular way to find other guys. You'd have to go to bars or bathhouses or particular parks where you could cruise, because the broader world wasn't available to us. That's changing, but gay culture as a rule has always been more open to that kind of niche way of finding mates, I think. Also you've got gay men who just are maybe more sex positive or more open to trying technologies because they don't feel like they're in danger in the same way that a lot of women feel when they use these things like Tinder. So I think gay men were predisposed to use something like Grindr and to use the internet to find sex.
So as we wrap up, how do we include, do you think, more absence in our life and create a balance?
Well, there's little ways we can do it in our own lives. Like we can batch process our email. We don't actually lose any productivity if we just check our email like 5 times a day instead of 500. And that can bring a lot of control to our lives, little things like that. Things like a digital detox, taking a weekend off from the internet to try and remind yourself that you can read a book without being distracted. More broadly, I would love to see more media studies and technology studies programs in our schools. I think our children don't need help using the internet, but they do need help seeing themselves use the internet. So bringing media studies into language arts programs, I think, would be a huge help.
The name of the book is The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection. It's by Michael Harris and published by Current. Michael, thank you very much for spending time with us. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The End of Absence. It's published by Current. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.